Hi everybody, I'm Alex Brayshaw. Welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club. I'm, as you'd expect, a B2B marketer and very much looking forward to hearing everything from our fantastic speakers today. So the Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers. We provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers, everything you could imagine. Today, we have over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you are very welcome. I'll run through how this session works in a moment. And if you've been with us before, welcome back. It's good to have you along. You know how this works. Please do get involved. If you've got a question, just ask. The more we get involved, the better it's going to be for everybody. This is the penultimate of our webinars on how business marketers are dealing with change. And my goodness, are we in a moment of change? Today is a big day, not just for us, but for the US as well. We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, and political and social conflict dominating our lives. That calls for us to do business marketing differently now and in the future. So over the course of this webinar series, you've heard from client side and agency side marketers and more today in businesses who are in startup to mature corporates about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, brand, marketing strategy, messages and channels. We'll be sharing experiences and offering advice in what we call show and tell. Shortly, we're going to hear from today's speakers and how they're seeing the impact of change on agencies, comms, diversity, and collaboration. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box, add their name so I know who it's for and I can ask the question. And then I'll ask those questions to the speakers at the end of all the sessions. And if you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or a role that you'd like to ask for help for in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box and I'll mention it at the end of the webinar. Also, please flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar. We're always looking for great perspectives to write about this one or to find out about more of BMC. And of course, we'll be in touch. Finally, you can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag BMC Showtell. So let's get on with it. Our first speaker today is Tim Ferguson. Tim is the director of program delivery at Virtual Stock. He's interviewed 4 marketing agencies to get their stories on how they've managed during the COVID-19 crisis and what they have done to survive. I, for one, am very keen to hear these results. If you've got any questions for Tim, add them into the chat, starting with the word Tim, and I'll ask them at the end of the sessions. So, Tim, over to you.
Thank you very much, Alex. So, I took the opportunity under this brief to talk to a number of agencies about how the impact of COVID-19 has affected them over the, well, since the beginning of this year. And also looking a little bit back to, you know, what happened last time around in 2008, not a pandemic, but another crisis in the marketing or in business. There are some similarities and some real differences. The range of agencies I looked at was in sports marketing, events and sponsorship, email and digital marketing, and in luxury goods, event and hospitality. Now, obviously, some of those have been impacted hard. The sports marketing and events side have seen significant impact, and their revenues were down significantly, particularly in June and July. I'm not taking this month into account at the moment. But they had long-standing clients who still needed to communicate and still needed to work and get their profiles out there. So they moved a lot of their budgets online that were going to go to events. And I know many of you have done similar things. Also, through the sports side, they moved to esports and started pushing esports heavily and invested in a virtual events platform where people could start to experience getting together with other people around particular topics or particular sports in a virtual setting. It's cost the agency some money, but it is paying some dividends because the clients are putting money in to support it and putting money into the agency. Now, they did shrink, they churned out a number of people, but in doing so, they took the opportunity to target some skills they felt weren't going to be as useful in the coming year, and brought in less people coming into the agency, but they did actually recruit people who were bringing skills that were more on the digital side and the esports marketing side for them. Their overall message, I think, to me at the end was they are leaner, fitter, and actually in a better place than when they started. If I look at the luxury goods agency, very similar. Revenues down 65% year on year. Events and hospitality chopped off at the knees. They let people go. They moved out of their offices. They went 100% remote working. And the first 3 months looked pretty bad. But the CEO stepped back into the business to be more hands-on. They've started engaging direct with clients. And although they lost some, and some customers panicked and cut all their marketing budget, they did, with the customers they still managed to retain, they've got the digital spend up, and they also managed to encourage those customers to go for market share while the market was so disruptive. And some of those customers bought into that, and they really went for lead generation and digital and social marketing to get a jump on anyone else before the market started to pick up again. And that seemed to be a message that actually worked very well. Their costs are now 50% down on where they were. They're actually expecting to be end the year 20% up on where they were expecting to be, because costs are down and they've managed to retain their business ongoing. And the CEO's quote, which I liked, was, "I'm now being the CEO I should have been a year ago." And he again feels he's in a better place than he was. The digital and marketing agency, very interesting. Obviously, travel and hospitality clients disappeared overnight, particularly any that were VC backed. And this agency spans both the UK and the US, which is interesting. Revenue down 15%, not as much as the other ones because they weren't reliant on events and hospitality in the same way. They're expecting actually a 10% upside year on year. It's not where they were hoping to be, but they're still expecting an upside because, again, they did let people go. At the beginning, they kind of panicked and let too many people onto furlough and had to then start bringing them back once they understood the business loans, how to access new money and that sort of thing. But what they have seen is the white collar professionals who are all now at home, and quite a lot of the younger ones are with their parents, have got additional disposable income. Because they're not paying rent, they're not going out, they're not going on holiday. And the online side of the business, any of their online retail customers have seen a huge boom in activity. And this is not just Amazon, this is anyone in that space, because you're seeing those white collar workers looking for places to spend their money. And the best quote I got from this person before I hand over was, that's my alarm saying it's 5 minutes. Go away. Right, sorry.
Thank you.
Was that it is the marketeer's responsibility to keep the rest of your colleagues in work. And they saw it that absolutely, if you weren't keeping your colleagues in work, then what were you doing? And I'll leave you with that thought and hand over back to Alex.
Tim, thank you. That's a very interesting quote at the end. We're going to come back to that because I think we're going to have some questions around that. But thank you. That's a good spread of organisations you've spoken to, and a really, really interesting insight there. Thank you. So second speaker is Daria Partas. So Daria is a communications mentor and strategist with 15 years of international professional experience in brand, comms and reputation management. She's going to talk about great B2B comms to use in times of change. Again, if you have questions for Daria, add them into the chat, starting with the word Daria. So Daria, over to you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Alex. So when working on the brief, I've relied on the experience of my own clients and my fellow marketeers from some other B2B businesses. A client of mine wears three hats. He's the executive assistant or right-hand man to an ultra-high net worth individual. He's the founder of a tech startup, which sells a lifestyle and property management software. And he's a breathing coach and an author of a book on personal transformation. Working as an EA, my client had both operational and mental health challenges related to his job. As a result, he developed a software which allows him to do his job more efficiently, saving him a lot of time. He has also developed a breathing technique which helped him to reclaim his mental well-being. Now, while retaining his permanent job, he has also launched these side business ventures, which both target the same people as customers, his peers or other executive assistants. So he wants to offer and sell his state-of-the-art software to other assistants who face the same operational challenges as he once had before developing his tech product. And they all suffer from the same work-related pressures. So he offers them private breathing sessions to reduce stress levels and restore balance. He is treating the same group of people as B2B and B2C customers at the same time. Interestingly, the same people react absolutely differently to these two offers. When spoken to about the positive effects of breathing, even online, on LinkedIn, people gain immediate interest and queue up, literally queue up for private sessions. But if my client's marketing team reaches out to the same people to discuss the software they would genuinely benefit from in their jobs, these people just couldn't care less. So this was true in the times before COVID, but in the times of COVID, this has become even more true for my client's business. So the point here is that traditionally in B2B relationships, we have heavily relied on events, and this was something that allowed for a small talk to happen. But now when we're all leading these virtual business lives, people are desperate for a real human connection, for entertainment, for inspiration, even in business-to-business communication. And they're just not willing to spend another 2 hours in front of their screens to learn about this new sophisticated transformational piece of technology. And even if they do connect to an online event, then how engaged are they? Instead, they're ready to pour money on masterclass subscriptions, online breathing, yoga and fitness classes, Peloton bikes. But they, generally speaking, are not interested in a B2B sales pitch on a, you know, on a personal level. So what does this mean and where does this leave us as B2B marketeers? So what we know is that we have to compete in a very, very, very crowded online space, in which we are, by the way, competing against things that are much more exciting to engage with, while our target audience are busy cooking lunch or dinner in their kitchen at home. So we have to be realistic about the effectiveness of approaching things in the ways that we're used to, and now more than ever. So back in March, when we were all left in limbo with no real short or long-term perspectives, we thought that continuing things as normal, but online, could be a solution for until the pandemic passes. So as offline events were canceled, B2B marketing efforts and budgets shifted to conduct the same events only online. And technology was fast to offer solutions mimicking real-life experiences, whether it's via Zoom or Facecast for events, trade conferences keep happening. There is a main stage, breakout sessions, roundtables, even networking lounges. Only no canapes and coffee, unless you have taken care of that yourself beforehand. But isn't that something we all expect from a conference or attending an event? Even if the coffee is, you know, taste burnt and milk is offered in these plastic milk sachets that are bad for the environment, still there is something we value in the immediate human touch and, you know, sharing physical space with other people, which makes us pay ridiculous money for the tickets, fly over the oceans, squeeze into the crowded tube to make it on time for that one session. even if you can watch it later on YouTube for free. I've done it many times myself. So I was talking to a peer marketeer who's a business development manager at a tech growth up. And she used to be constantly on the go, flying between the continents, meeting people, shaking hands, closing deals. Now she has obviously learned the Zoom ethics code by heart. She's still attending conferences in a StreamYard live studio, only complains that she misses the small talk because that's exactly where the deals are struck. She also mentioned that suddenly she missed enveloped printed invites, which have now been replaced with emails, which inevitably drown in her spam folder. Now, of course, this is not to say that digital in B2B marketing is a whole new concept. Of course, we have relied on it before, and gradually client events were moving online and taking the form of webinars and other event formats. But today, the sophistication of available technology is overwhelming. And someone was telling me about their experience of attending a B2B webinar, which, according to my friend's feedback, provided excellent experience. The event convener was using Mural app to break her audience into groups for visual collaboration, which mimicked a whiteboard in a real classroom. So this all looks like a great substitute solution for the time of movement restrictions. But again, a solution which is a kind of a contingency plan for the situations when, for whatever reason, we're unable to be physically present on site. And to me, it just doesn't seem to be the way forward. Someone I was talking to said online activities for B2B businesses are just a way to keep the lights on, and these lights are getting dimmer. Online engagements, no matter how great our apps are to conduct them, are not a new Uber. Digital marketing tools are not disruptors to the way we approach B2B communications. They are temporary substitutions. Think of them as maybe vegan meat for the people who are trying to reduce their meat consumption. The reality is we all miss and like, you know, the good old steak. So what do we do with all this? The role of technology will most certainly remain more enhanced compared to the pre-COVID times, and some things may just never go back. And certainly our toolbox will become better. Digital technology allows for better and more intelligent online targeting and lead generation. And as more and more people have been forced to move online, you know, they start leaving their digital trace, and algorithms will have more data to learn from and inform our campaigns for more effectiveness. And in the future, events may become more exclusive and more valued, or it may go in a different direction. Brands may try and compensate for the lost opportunities over the pandemic. The good news is that marketing budgets may expand in this scenario, but the bad news is that we'll have to be even more creative with our offline engagements because there will be just too many on offer. So for now,
I think that's a great place to be, Daria. I think creativity and good news is what we need at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and one more thing, which is going to be my last point. So, by the way, last time when we spoke, we met at an event, a real event, and I was preaching about thought leadership in B2B marketing. Whereas now, I'd like to say that we should probably set that aside, just for the time being, and just focus on being most helpful and responsive to our customers, you know, and being most human. And as David Van Schaik, CMO of the marketing practice, mm-hmm. said, suddenly it's not okay to have this didactic message in every communication. It's enough for it to be useful or empathetic or just fun. And one of my fellow marketeers said that his company was able to connect with customers over a charity cause. This allowed them to connect on a human level first before, you know, even though online, before taking matters to business. So that's a tip. And that's my final point.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Daria. I think that's an incredibly interesting kind of run through what we need to do in terms of just being connected better as in the way things have happened over the last few months. So definitely loads of questions going to be around that. So thank you so much. Anybody, if you've got questions for Tim or Daria, put them in the chat box, Mark, Daria and Tim and or Tim. And then we'll come back to those later on. But thank you, Daria. So our third speaker is Fran Brosnan. So Fran is the co-founder and chairman of Umabono, Operating in the UK, Europe and US, Omobono is the digital experience company for B2B brands. It works with global corporates and scale-up businesses using real-time strategies to help them succeed in uncertainty and complexity. Fran is a 3x IPA Advertising Effectiveness Award winner and a fellow of the Marketing Society. Fran's going to focus on diversity and what marketing leaders can do to improve. So again, if you have questions for Fran, add them in the chat, starting with the word Fran. And Fran, it's over to you.
Thanks, Alex. This all came about because I was chatting to Dave about what, you know, B2B marketers were doing to move through this, you know, this crisis. And Tim, I liked your comment about keeping everyone in work. But I think that, you know, for me, what became really important is that we shouldn't just be building, you know, just continuing. We should be trying to, it's this period of change. What could we change and how do we change it for the better? The CBI are using this phrase, building back better. And that got me thinking. And I suppose I landed on diversity being, you know, nearly the end of my career now, but being a woman in business and having seen some changes over that period, but recognizing that we are still not as diverse as we could be. I mean, you know, the design industry, I think, has 60% male, 40% female. So that's not bad, although it should be 50-50, but only, you know, 90% white. So only 10% people from ethnic minorities. And so what really is sort of making me think at the moment is there's a clear link between diversity and positive business performance. So there's a business case for diversity that we're hearing a lot. And, you know, Emma Walmsley, the CEO of GSK, just got made into a dame because she's working so hard on diversity in the pharmaceutical industry, as well as hopefully finding a vaccine for COVID in her spare time. But I think it's not just a business case, because actually, you know, what should business people be doing at the moment? We should be making sure that everyone feels that they've got a part in it, because if that's the way we're going to make business sustainable, if it raises everybody up in society, not just a few. And just as an example about that, I was going to reference something that I'd worked on a project with the CBI a couple of years ago called The Voice of Business, and we did some research about how people felt about business, and on the whole, actually, they were quite positive. And I would argue that this COVID crisis has helped business and helped, because it's helped people understand that businesses are the supply chain. You know, we are the ones that bring things to market, whether or not it's food or pharmaceuticals. We're the one of the manufacturers who make, you know, protective clothing. So I think people feel overall not bad about business. But what was interesting was that people don't like fat cat bosses and them, you know, being paid millions. But they're quite happy for footballers to be paid millions. And when we dug into the reasons for that, it was that people felt that, you know, you just needed talent. You could be anyone. If you've got the right talent, you could be a successful footballer. It was only a certain cadre of person who could be a really, you know, a fat cat boss, as it were. And typically, you know, white men over 50, mostly university educated. So I think that, you know, what we have to work quite hard on is bringing more diversity into our businesses, more people from more diverse backgrounds. Because then business will be seen to be for everybody, and then I think everyone will benefit. So I thought that I would just talk briefly about a couple of things that we're doing at Omobono that, you know, that are stepping towards that. And it's a huge goal, and you have to, you know, face the fact that we talk about small moves for big results a lot at Omobono in the way that we work. So what are the small moves that we've been taking? The first thing we did, which just sounds quite simple actually, is we rewrote our definition of success. Success, I think, often tends to be on financial terms. So we rewrote it. And if it's all right, Alex, I'll just read the statement, which is that we rewrote it to say success at Omobono is to build a company which is renowned for being a fantastic place to work, where everyone brings their wholehearted selves to building great relationships with our clients, delivering outstanding work and a commercially strong performance. So the money's still in there, but actually what we're measuring now is whether or not people believe we are delivering on these values of being a fantastic place to work. So that's the first step that I think is just saying, look, success is not just about money. It's about making sure that everybody really brings their whole selves to work and you have created a really positive workspace. The second thing we did was, you know, pretty obvious, is to just do everything you can to encourage people, both sexes and diverse backgrounds, to apply for jobs. So we've taken out gendered language in our job descriptions. We've told our recruitment partners that we don't want to see pictures or names in CVs. So we have anonymized CVs in first round. So as a result, you can't see people's sex. You can't see their ethnicity or their nationality. So you just judge the person by their skills, not by who you sort of think they might be. So that's been quite interesting for us. Of course, once you meet people, you see who they are, but it feels like it's a sort of cleaner, fairer process to start with. So that's the second thing that we're doing, is just to try and make our own recruitment processes a bit more open in terms of, access for people from all backgrounds. And then the third thing that we're doing a lot of is quite simply educating ourselves. You know, it's like we all like to think that we're not biased. I would love to think that I've always been a great supporter of women in the workplace, but I just did, I don't know if any of you have done it, one of the Harvard bias tests. Turns out I'm terribly biased towards thinking that men are much more likely to have careers than women. I mean, I was really horrified by the results. So if you don't think you have bias, I just say go on the Harvard implicit bias website and do some tests yourself and you'll discover that you have. But as coaches say, you know, awareness is curative. So if we know we're biased, we can at least start to do something about it. And that's what we're trying to do at Omobono. We run something we call the D&I Book Club. It's not really a book club. It's like books, blogs, videos. We talk to each other about Black Lives Matter. We've looked at the idea of privilege. We've done training on inclusive design. So we're just trying to really work hard to create awareness amongst ourselves of the prejudices, if you like, that we bring unknowingly into the workplace, and to try and help ourselves get rid of those so that we can look to include, many more people from diverse backgrounds in the agency. So that's what I wanted to say, Alex. I don't know how I did on time, because unlike Tim, I was organised enough to get a timer going.
You were pretty good, Fran, as I'd expect as a slick presenter that you are. That was fantastic. And my goodness, this topic we could do for an hour, because I think it is one of the core things in every industry. But I think for us in the creative industry that, we embrace perspective and different backgrounds and perspectives, we should, because we're trying to be creative and find new ideas and things. I think this is such a key part of what we do in marketing. So if we're going to drive interesting ideas, then this is going to be a core aspect of that. So I think we're going to come back to that in the questions, but thank you very much. And of course, any questions for Fran, put them in the chat box and we'll come to those later. And then to our final speaker, last but definitely not least, Rachel Hind-Harris is the Head of Solutions Marketing at Panasonic Business Solutions. Rachel will talk about collaboration in challenging times of which we're in, how to engage, align and collaborate across teams. So if you've got questions for Rachel, of course, put them in the chat, start with the word Rachel. Rachel, over to you.
Thanks, Alex. One of the things you said earlier, Alex, was that we all need good news. And one of the things that I found, so I'm just going to talk a little bit about my personal experience working with my sales team. And it's good news. Actually, collaboration in challenging times is an opportunity. And I think it's accelerated a process that I've been working on continuously in my career. I think a previous MD of mine said to me, gosh, must be about 5 years ago now, that there shouldn't be an and in sales and marketing. We should be one team. But I spent all of my career trying to align with sales, trying to get their time, they're out on the road where they should be. They should be generating the revenue and we should be working together to do that. But getting their mind share and getting their time has been a challenge. But what I've found since the pandemic hit is that actually engagement, alignment and collaboration with my team has been much improved. There's always room for improvement, but it's been much improved. So I think the first thing that I've noticed is actually that the value of the marketing, or value of marketing teams, seems to have increased. They're actively coming to me to say, how do I do this? What can I do? And they want to know how to engage with the customers during this tough period. So I think the steps that I've went through are steps that I've tried to do before, but they have more impact now. So the first thing is listen. I make sure I can listen to them, and I actually have the time in the diary to listen to them. And that has started the process, but also questioning and challenging them, not in a nasty way, but obviously challenge to improve, dig deeper into what's driving them. We know that their compensation plans drive them, but actually, what are they hearing? What have they seen? What do they know? And that prompts the discussion where ideas come out. And because ideas can't come from one person, and Mark, as brilliant a marketeers as we all are, we don't have the answers to everything. But in doing the listening, in asking the questions, you can then take that away and propose back to them, propose the ideas and options that they've got, and build on what they tell you. And that has already started the collaboration process and builds to collaboration. So to give an example, one of the things that we've been doing is looking at more at social selling, looking at engagement through LinkedIn, because for our business, LinkedIn is the ideal platform and what we're trying to do. So it's enablement before, oh, I don't have time to do that. Oh no, I'll just like your post. And it's given the opportunity to start the journey of enabling new skills around social selling, which in turn has led to the identification of new opportunities, which then perpetuates the engage, align and collaborate, because they then see they get something from it. And then I've then just seen that cascade. So there's still lots of room for improvement, don't get me wrong, but in terms of reporting and sharing of information and more frequent engagement and feedback. So I think it's an opportunity for us to make sure we bring the teams closer together. I mean, you may have a brilliant relationship with your sales team, but I believe there's always improvement possible. So listen, question, propose, and then continue the collaboration, because it's only through that that we all learn and we all get better. So I know that was way under the 5 minutes, but and I could talk around the topic for a lot longer, but that was my main point. You know, it's not rocket science, but it's so valuable, and just wanted to share it.
Rachel, thank you. That was fantastic, and I think it distilled, I think, a lot of the experience I've seen, and I think probably many others have seen as well. But I think I'm going to dive into the questions very quickly, because I think, you know, we'll sort of go backwards a bit on these. But I think there's been quite a cultural shift, and we've all seen that in terms of this willingness to kind of club together and kind of go, well, how are we going to solve this problem? And I think we've always said between sales and marketing, or I've always said, if you've got a common goal and a common kind of target, everybody kind of rallies around it, and that's what you need. Whereas I think when that doesn't happen is when everyone's got individual targets and all kind of chasing after different accounts, and, you know, marketing is doing one thing and sales is doing something else. But do you think that was going to happen anyway, or do you think COVID has just driven that to such an extent that actually people are going, we've got to work together, as this ain't going to happen?
I do think it depends on the business you're in, because you nailed it with a common goal and common strategy. For me personally, it has accelerated it. But I think the openness, or the need to be to work together, has become more apparent during since, I guess, what is it, March now in the UK? Since then, the need has been there, and that alongside that need has overruled separate goals. So actually it's brought the common ground together. So that's for me. I guess for other people, if they have that common goal and common strategy, then it would have been happening anyway.
Do you think there's sort of personal barriers that have been broken down? Because I think, again, we're all living in our kitchens and bedrooms and whatever else. And actually, there's almost this kind of this thing's been removed where we go, OK, it's fine to say, actually, I don't know what I'm doing because we're kind of this is all going on. And it feels like there's been a real openness created.
Again, it depends how you get on with your team. But yes. And I think I've personally, again, sharing from my personal experience, I've had a moment where I actually got thanked by my sales team on a large division, you know, the divisional call. And I literally almost fell off my chair because a public thank you from them. Private thank yous I've had, but public, no. So, yes, I think you're right. I think some of those barriers are going. And I like it. Yeah. I think it's a good thing.
Alex, I was just wondering to pick up on that point, which I think is a good one, about the barriers being broken down. It certainly happened, I think, between agencies and clients, because if you think about all the barriers that were in place, you go and see a client, you go to this huge building and you get into a big atrium with rows of receptionists, and then you go through gates and security and up in lifts, and you go down corridors and into big rooms, and the client's right at the end of it, you know, or shielded by a whole tray of teas and coffees. It's really hard to develop a personal relationship from the get-go with something like that, whereas now we're just in people's bedrooms and sitting rooms and kitchens.
Yes,
we're all guess what, you know, we're all human, we're all the same. Turns out some people just have nicer art on the walls.
Yeah. I've got nothing.
I just realized that my giraffe is showing. There we go. I'll hide my art.
I'm gonna slightly hopefully tie this back to what Tim said at the beginning, because I think I had a question around Tim. One of the things you said was the CEO of the luxury, I think it was the luxury goods organization, said, I'm now being the CEO I should have been. Now this is interesting, and obviously you're not gonna name the CEO. But is that related to what we've just talked about? Is that him being much more open, much more kind of part of the gang? Is it him being, I've got to understand this, whatever, you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to understand, is there more kind of information about what that means?
I mean, we've probably all, you know, many of us have seen it, many of us have worked in businesses, some of us have even run those businesses where you're the owner, founder, your business grows quite nicely, you relax a little bit, you bring people in, you step back a little bit away from the client and from the day-to-day operation. And although, you know, that's a good way to help your business grow, you know, when it's growing, you can put good people in place. But what he found in particular was that obviously it was a crisis. He had to step back in and he started looking much more closely at the business. But he also engaged with his clients more directly than he had been. He'd kind of lost touch with his clients. And so he hadn't got a full understanding of the needs. He's a shrewd guy. So, you know, he was able to have those conversations which said, you know, talking around budgets and how could you allocate it? What could you do differently? And how about moving from, you know, just straightforward, you know, push advertising to maybe going for more lead gen type of work. So that just brought him back. It was kind of a bit of a grounding for him. And he realized he'd come too far away from both the client and the day-to-day operation.
Interesting. I think that's a good lesson. I think we've seen that over the years, I think, with lots of different initiatives to bring CEOs back down to the ground and see what's actually going on in businesses. So that's interesting.
His new client is down 90%. So he's only got 10% of the prospects that he started pre-COVID. You know, the rest have dropped by the wayside. So he's had to work really hard with those that he's got on his books to make sure they don't walk. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I think it's the same theme, isn't it? You know, everyone's got to pull together. It doesn't really matter. Ignore levels, ignore kind of where you're at. It's like, what's the goal? If it's to drive new business, then what are we going to do to address that? If the CEO is the best person to get in there and drive the business, then get him or her in there and work with the team to make it happen. Daria, just just want to ask you a question about the issues you talked about in terms of, you talked about EAs actually, which I think is, mm-hmm. is really interesting, and the support that they were needing. And you talked about the support they need. I was interested in how that support was being given to those that were managing them, because I think a lot of that pressure comes from above. And actually, how do you address that? Because it's fine to give support and resilience, but if that is, if somebody's being bombarded with kind of pressure and kind of quite high impact kind of stuff, then how do you address the issue that's going up above them? What's happening there?
First of all, the EAs, I can only speak for the experience of my clients, so I can't speak for everyone, but I think it would be true if I said that for many EAs, they have felt distanced from their bosses and principals, because, they've also been confined to their homes, and a relationship between an EA and their principal is usually very intimate, because an EA is a right hand person for another person, and a lot here depends on the emotional connection, on this chemistry between two people. And for my client specifically, what happened was that he was separated basically from his boss, and he lost this, he lost that perspective. He felt really overwhelmed, because he felt like, his boss was expecting him to perform at the same level, but there was no way for him to be near that, his boss, and to respond emotionally, to connect emotionally to that person. And so the pressures have, mounted and mounted and mounted over the period of time. And I think they're now really in a very difficult, it's a tough relationship, basically. Even though, operationally he's been efficient, he's got this software, but just this inability to be in the same space, to have to look into the eyes of the person, just made it impossible for them to work together, and maybe they will have to to end that relationship, business relationship between them.
Okay, thank you. Interesting. I think that I think that's a common issue. It's not just about EAs, managers, it's about people working collaboratively and not being able to, in a way we all used to and all we used to doing. I do think there's something about, it isn't just about resilience on the those that are being managed. It's about people in a management position, understanding how they need to work with those around them in a much better way, in a much more probably spending a lot more effort connecting with people than they used to. Because actually, rather than turning around and going, just do this for me. And I suppose I kind of think that's quite a traditional way of working, is having an EA and doing that sort of thing. But I think it's probably trying to find a way to engage and connect in the right way, I suppose.
One of the people I spoke to actually said that what she had noticed is that across the board, CEOs have been changing, even on LinkedIn or whatever platform they're using for, kind of building up their profiles. They've been changing their profile pictures from, those kind of business headshots to Zoom screenshots taken from their bedrooms, and that creates this effect of them being closer to their people and to their customers as well.
And do you think that is, we've put the picture in, so that's done, or do you think they're actually living and breathing it authentically?
I mean, that's the obvious answer. You have to be authentic, but Yeah, I mean, in a way, online or digital technology may, you know, in the times of COVID, may kind of force you into being more authentic, because then, and you know, and as I mentioned, you know, when I was presenting, now it's not enough just to talk about business. You have to connect with people on a personal level, even though, you know, online or in business relationship, you have to make sure that there is this personal touch first and then business.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you, Daria. Fran, I'm going to come back to you because this is an incredibly, again, fantastic kind of topic. I wanted to understand a little bit more about how you define, or no, actually not how you define, the breadth of diversity and inclusivity that you start to look at in terms of how do you kind of really understand all the different aspects of diversity that you should be considering. As I said earlier, you know, we should, as an industry, you know, if we're not being diverse and inclusive, we're actually not doing the job we should be doing, because we should be creating ideas and actually coming from all sorts of perspectives and backgrounds. But how do you, as an agency, go, okay, these are the areas, these are the people, these are the groups, these are the people that we feel should be represented, and how do you go about ensuring that they are represented in the right way?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, we did it quite simply. We did an agency survey where we asked people which diverse groups they were interested in focusing on, so that we could get a sense of where, you know, what was most important to the people who work for us. And remembering that, you know, we have offices in the States as well, so you know, there might be differences in terms of people's perceptions. You know, so obviously during the you know, because of Black Lives Matter, the ethnicity was something that got escalated. But actually, we started, funnily enough, the issue that came up top was mental health. And that was pre-COVID, actually. And I think we underestimate how pressurized these roles that we're all in are. You know, I love that idea that marketing's keeping everyone in work, and we all feel it. You know, if you're an agency, you're as good as your last job. If you're a client, you know, are you bringing the leads in? Are you converting? Are you driving the business forward? That's a huge pressure. And we all work in fantastically competitive markets. And also there is, you know, I think in marketing, there is a bit of a sense of people are, you know, it's got a bit of a culture of sort of work hard, play hard, as it were. And we maybe forget the impact that that has. So, the sort of mental health stuff came up first. And as a result of that, we put in place a counselling service run by a really great company called Sanctus, so that people can, you know, can just talk to people who are not connected with work. And we are training sort of diversity officers, who are people who you can go to. Because traditionally in companies, you know, if you've got any sort of issue, you go to HR. And then, you know, your fear is that HR are going to feed that upwards and that, you know, your boss will hear about it. So the idea of diversity counsellors are people that you can just talk to, and, you know, in the old days, say, can grab a coffee and just have a chat. Whereas now, obviously, you can do it on Zoom, but that we just wanted to have that external source that people could talk to and literally talk about anything and not feel that they shouldn't raise it up, as it were. And then we talked, all, you know, we obviously talked about gender, as I say, about race and ethnicity, disability, and then you know, and then gender, sexuality. And those were all just the things that people said that they would like us to work on. And we got people to put their hand up and say, you know, I'm interested in this area, I'd like to do something about it. And that's so when, you know, the people who volunteered to pick up on the how do we recruit people and try and take out some of the bias in terms of ethnicity and terms of gender, that was all done by the people who came to our diversity group.
Fantastic, thank you. I think the fact you're driving it from the top, but I think ensuring that everyone in the organisation has that voice is the key. And I think as you say, when you're working in a global agency, those priorities or those things that matter most to people will vary. And you know, we saw that with Black Lives Matter, and that varied in the US in terms of how emotional that and how fundamental that was to people.
I think if I may say that one of the things that did help is that we put our hands up and said, look, you know, we don't know about this stuff. We want to know about this. Tell us, help us. And the fact that we started talking about it meant that people were happier talking about it. And listening to some of our Black colleagues in the States talking about how scared they were during some of the riots in Chicago was a real eye-opener. And in a way, I'm just super proud that they felt supported enough to be able to say those things, you know, in front of everyone. And they got so much support from everybody. So it's just raising it, you know, as I was saying, you know, awareness is curative. If you raise it, if people feel they can raise it, suddenly you can talk about it. And if you can talk about it, it's just that bit better, you know, you can do things about things you know.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned mental health, and I think, you know, these things all impact. They're either driven by or impacted by mental health. And I think the more we talk about it, I mean, there's been a lot around mental health, and you know, I personally have suffered as well in the last 2 years, and have had to deal with that and be very open and honest about that as well. So I get it, but equally, the things that drive my mental health issues are different to everybody else's. So they are all connected. Yeah. But disconnected, but interconnected, if you know what I mean. So I think that's got to be fundamental to all of it. You've got to get that support and that that ability to talk built in around all of those initiatives.
Yeah.
So my goodness, we are running out of time. I don't know if any of the panelists have got any questions for any other panelists before we sort of do the final run in. But any other questions for anybody?
I've got one for Fran. It's just curiosity, really. So did you already have a culture within your company for openness anyway, when you started, when you said, help us, did you already have the foundation for that?
Yeah, I'd love to say yes, as a founder. I mean, we've always been very open as a company, and I, you know, we've been going for 20 years. We think we have a fantastic culture. But the truth is, as you get bigger and as you're a boss, people stop saying things to you because of who you are. You know, it's going back to you not being thanked publicly by your sales team. I think there's something shifting in culture now. So even though you think you're open, actually it turns out you're not as open as you thought. So we put in place a year ago something we called Omo Bono 2.0, which we brought in a fantastic consultant called Mac Fogelson, and we've been working with her to really open up the ways that we communicate. And it's transformed the way that we are with each other. It really has. I have to say, I don't think it would happen if we were a really rigid, you know, really hierarchical, you know, boss-led community. I don't think it would have happened, because we'd never have welcomed that idea in for a start, and everybody's embraced it. So I think there was a little bit, if you like, we had some soft edges, but truthfully we got into some bad habits, and so it was really helpful having somebody working with us to help us out of those bad habits and back to where we thought we were, but actually we weren't quite.
Thank you. It was just nice to know, coming from large corporate backgrounds.
It's really hard in corporate backgrounds, pockets. I think. Yeah, well, yeah, you do pockets. Yes, exactly.
I mean, Panasonic is very, very good like that. And we do have the mental health people that we can go and talk to. And but it is just such a massive organization that a different approach would be needed. That's all. But thank you for sharing.
I had one more question for Fran. Did you look at any other examples in other industries, other brands that you thought were doing a really good job, good best practice that was out there, and said that's kind of what we'd like to be like?
We have done a bit, and I think there's an analysis done by somebody called Textio. if you know them, who analyze people's websites in terms of what they're saying about jobs, and actually compare that. And there is some, I don't know if we can share links on these things afterwards, but there is some quite interesting work that's been done. You know, people saying one thing, and actually, you know, in their corporate statements, and then actually the way they talk in job, their job descriptions is completely, you know, we welcome anyone from any diverse background with open arms, you know, but the language is so structured, and what everything that they say is so regimented that you just think, yeah, I don't really believe you. Whereas, and I think that's what Textio does, that they, but the people who are really diverse and have very different language in the way that they express themselves. You know, there's just a different, yeah, just different language, and I think language is hugely important in influencing how you come across. So yeah, we did a bit of analysis on that.
Indeed, thank you. I think, my goodness, that is our time up, which is incredible. Thank you all very much. I'm going to do a bit of a closing, but of course, thank you to our incredible speakers. So Tim, Daria, Fran, Rachel, what incredible presentations and a great range of topics. But also, I think what connected it is just this, you know, all of the things everyone talked about was about human connection. And I think what we're learning all the way through COVID and all of these things we're having to deal with is actually human connection and this idea of common goals. I think common goals came through all of your presentations in terms of, if we know what we're aiming for, we can work together and we'll do it kind of openly, and we'll kind of do it in a shared fashion in a way that is kind of is thoughtful and kind of in a way that includes everybody and is inclusive of ideas and people and whatever those backgrounds are. So I think this human connection and common goals is really key. So thank you for all of those and for being sort of so well, kind of such a good theme. So for those that are going to be listening after this, this is all going to be available afterwards. There's a thank you to, of course, our backroom staff. So we've got Louise, Claire, Elise, Alex, and Jay. But of course, for you, our audience, whether you're listening live or listening on demand, thank you for participating. Remember, next week, it's our big hall networking event. So that's all about building an emotional connection with your customers, and probably ties in a bit to what we're talking about today. And there's going to be three great speakers to listen to on there as well. So do sign up at businessmarketingclub.org.uk/events. And then available to download now is our weekly podcast, which is all about branding this week. So do go and have a look at that. And then finally, if you sign up to be a member of the Business Marketing Club, you can access all of our events and webinars, all of our mentoring services, business marketers, and of course our white papers and blogs, all of which are free of charge. And those white papers, which include one from Emeritus Professor of Cranfield University School of Management, Malcolm McDonald, and he talks about how we can develop financially qualified value propositions that capture the attention of their customers. So lots of very cool stuff on there. All of the details are at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you want any more information about any of that, you can contact Dave Stevens at davestevensnow@gmail.com, and he'll come back to you, I'm sure. Without further ado, thank you, everybody, and stay safe. Enjoy the next few weeks, and here's to the next session. Take care.
Thanks,
Thank
Alex.
You,
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you. Bye, Alice. Bye.